my first question is kind of about the individual and the collective. You start out so the film starts out with you investigating Stanley Harlan's death, mm-hmm. and that took 6 years, right? From the initial investigation to making the film.
Yeah, yeah. We picture locked in February of 2015, and yeah, he died on August 28th of 2008. So from the night I started working on his story, basically that night, to picture lock, it was, I don't know, that's too much math for me. That's what, like 6.5 years or something.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it was an asinine amount of time, actually.
Yeah, sometimes you never knew the story was going to unfold
yeah,
and take
yeah.
that long.
Yeah, I try to basically give myself a little bit more credit because it evolved so broadly, but part of the experience was also learning at the same time how to make a film. So a lot of the terrible decisions that were made had to be made in order to make better decisions, right. And that's partially why things took so long, and the edit was pretty enormous because this was such a blank canvas of a story. So it was a really big challenge.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the evolution a little more. At one point, and you mentioned this in the Q&A, at one point you realize that the film is not going to be just about Stanley Harlan. It's going to be about Taser International. And you talk about Taser being kind of the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if, should we play the clip? Let's play the clip of you saying that.
The problem with making a film is that it becomes a math problem. It's a point of view problem. It's whose point of view, who's this movie really about? And what Athena and Daryl and Kenny and I eventually, you know, were talking about was in order to sort of serve the broader purpose of what happened to Stanley, in order to truly have a three-dimensional understanding of what happened, we had to understand why Taser was coming from this, I would say, delusional place, but I don't think necessarily inauthentic place.
So for folks who haven't seen the film, can you just say a little bit about who Daryl and Kenny and Athena are?
Yeah, so Kenny and Athena Bechtel are Athena is Stanley's mom, biological mother, and Kenny's his stepdad. And then Daryl is his biological father. And throughout the making of the film, they were there was no collaboration. You know, they had no creative say in the film, but I was incredibly close to them individually because the whole catalyst for this film was their son's death. And so everything I did, I wanted to kind of at least get them to understand why. And so they never really – I never had to have permission per se to turn this film into a film about this company, Taser International, as opposed to just a sort of observational piece about their son's death and what it had done to Moberly, Missouri. But I felt I wanted to give them the respect of – in order to really understand why this happened to your son, we need to understand the psychology between the men pulling the strings, basically, not just the officers on the scene of his death.
And at what point in the process did you realize that this had to be a film that was – I mean, I'm sure that there wasn't one eureka moment, but at what point in the 6 years did you realize, oh, this needs to be broader, this needs to be about – connecting dots and making a constellation?
The first step in that was so there were like three key things that happened to me, really, if I can simplify it. The first was that I was really diving into the officers that night Stanley died. I was digging into their training on how to use this weapon. And their training combined with the special prosecutor in the case who decided not to press criminal charges against the officers, his rationale, those things combined showed me that the officers probably didn't have a very clear understanding of what they were dealing with. It started with, okay, do they really understand, though, what this weapon is? Because when I went out there, it seemed obvious that if you shoot someone for 31 seconds in the chest with electricity, they might die, you know, and that wasn't the case for them. And that made me more curious about Taser. So then I started talking more and trying to negotiate access with Taser based on the idea that, well, it seems like it's a pretty safe weapon, but this has got to be some user error, right? I mean, like, there's no way that if I really sit down with them and spend time with them, they're going to advertise that this kid didn't die from this Taser. And then that day, eventually getting that access to the company and spending just a day with them, that's when it really the image, the Orwellian nature of this place that couldn't see itself for mm-hmm. what it really was, these men that can't see themselves for who they really were. I didn't know what the secret was, but I knew that, again, that there's such a big disconnect between what's happening in the real world and the way that these guys are projecting an image of themselves, the way they refuse to capitulate about any of the sensical dangers that might exist, and that then that's about, like, okay, why is the disconnect so big? You know, whatever lie they're telling themselves must be so significant that it has caused them to look crazy protecting it, basically, because they look and talk and act crazy.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, at the point that you did realize that this had to be about more, and you look at all of these different moments of police training, or at least quote-unquote training, taser representatives being shocked themselves, all those kinds of videos. I'm curious about what you feel like is lost by – I mean, I think the film works really well as a larger portrait of this company and kind of its path to selling so many tasers. But I'm curious about what's lost by kind of shifting the view from that small to the big.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of those things that makes cinema a tough medium for discourse. You know, it's an inherently introspective medium because you're looking for the audience to try to reflect. The best films aren't necessarily films that tell you how you should feel about a thing. That's why issue filmmaking can be really tricky. And what I felt sort of personally attached to, and what was a hard decision, was that third moment when I was editing the film. So I have mm-hmm. this, you know, okay, the training doesn't match up with what it should. The company doesn't match up in their rhetoric or in their common sense with what you would think. The third thing now, after figuring out what they were lying about, what this big lie is, was trying to make a movie that was both genuine in its understanding of Taser's point of view and also a movie about victims, a movie about Stanley Harlan. There wasn't room for both.
For both.
Yeah, because if you make the movie about the victims, it undermines everything that the antagonist has to say. And therefore, everything they say is just information that we then use to dismiss as opposed to trying to engage with it.
And we see that in the order of the film. We open with the scene of the bison, but then we open just beyond that, following the cop around and seeing his perspective in Detroit, right?
Yeah. In the course of a 90-minute film, the medium in its own way is designed to actually be more about behavior and about people and be introspective and reflective of an environment versus, like, make an argument, make a case. Because that then means that everything is an escalation. I have to escalate my thesis if I give you a thesis in order to make the thesis dramatic because it's a medium for drama and conflict. That's not how newspaper articles work. That's not how long-form investigative reporting works. And because of that, what we do is we basically boil down complicated realities into very simple pathways.
Filmmakers,
when they make issue films, are sort of subjugated to that information because the information is important. And this is not to totally say that, like, issue films don't offer important, you know, they're not an important part of a societal dialogue. They very much can be. But the trap that you run into is that your information now becomes so important that that's what you're selling. And in order to make your information more important than the other person at Sundance's information, right, it's like make it more dramatic because cinema is about drama and conflict and, like, human behavior and reality. And those two things can be contradictory. But as Robert Greene, who is the fourth editor on the film, you know, puts very clearly in a great way, issue films a lot of times are edited for the moment. And that's not necessarily great filmmaking. Filmmaking should be, you know, should
be able
to transcend
that. There seems to be a difference between making art and making a case at times.
At times, perhaps. Yeah, and that's because the expectation has now been set that, and Robert says this is the best way to explain it. Exploring human behavior is a more important truth to explore in filmmaking than the information you might be able to find in a newspaper. Because that's what the medium is designed for.
I want to circle back to something, and I think this relates to a movie about human beings. When you talk about Athena and Stanley's family having, you know, quote, no creative say in the making of the film, there's this moment in the Q&A after our screening at the Missouri Theater where Athena calls it our documentary. Can we hear that?
First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight and sharing our documentary. And everybody, our family, friends that have been behind this and been there for us, and everyone that has worked on this documentary, it's unbelievable. It's come so far.
I really love that moment because it shows how much agency Athena feels that she has over her son's story. And I wanted to talk a little bit today about agency and kind of hear, what did you learn about agency?
I think that when she says it's our documentary, it's true. And you don't have to be involved in the decision-making of how the story is told without, you know, and simultaneously sacrifice that it's your story. The reason this gets petty is because it becomes really, really hard to see yourself for who you are. Stanley Harlan's case was to remind the world and Taser International, writing their own sort of history in this movie, that this is what we're talking about. We're talking about dead people. They are actual people. They're not incidents or cases.
Were there moments in that process where you either had to remind yourself of that?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And also moments where you had to step away from that, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a moment very early on in the edit where I'm going through, and this was years ago. I mean, this was before, this would have been right after I interviewed with Taser, and I'm editing, I'm not really editing, I'm just kind of like working with this dash cam footage of what happens to Stanley Harlan, and it was like Easter Sunday or something, you know, and I'm watching this kid die over and over and over again. And what you have to be really cognizant of, and it's hard to do, is, again, like, at the end of the day, I'm making a movie. It's just a product. It's just a thing, you know, and it can transcend that. But it's literally a product, right? And so it becomes hard because I'm certainly capable of falling prey to, like, it has to be more dramatic this. It has to have this. It has to be this because it needs to be successful.
And how do those decisions about when to turn up the drama or when to introduce this character for the most impact change the way that you feel like you interacted with the story? I'm thinking about the agency question, right? Like, how does that change your ownership over Stanley's story?
It's about self-awareness. It's about remembering to, like, a respect for, and this is, again, part of the problem with issue films sometimes is, as filmmakers, we might only be interested in the characters because of the evidence they can provide and not because of who they are as people. And so I was very sensitive all the time to, which is why I'm still so close to his family and why I'm glad I'm close to them, because I was very sensitive to, like, this is a person, these are people, everybody, the Steve Tuttle at Taser International is a person. And sometimes that's what's so fascinating about documentary, right? It's like, the cops in the movie are real cops. They're real guys. Why did they choose to do this? There's like 50 different new avenues that open up because they're real people. And so the agency question, though, is interesting because if I'm too sensitive to the fact that I want to do Stanley Harlan justice, for example, it will cause me to manipulate the honesty of the situation in order to only serve his purpose. Objectivity is not a real thing. Like, objectivity doesn't exist as soon as you make an edit, right? We all know that.
In the interview with Joshua Oppenheimer last year, he was just, you know, saying objectivity is, you know, this fly on the wall thing is total baloney. Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
No one forgets that they're being camera.
Right.
Like, no one forgets that there's a camera there and they're being videotaped.
Right. It's more about the honest reflection of a complicated environment. That's why documentaries are fascinating, because we're exploring reality. We're exploring actual human behavior. And so, you know, you can't basically, I can want to serve a purpose of Stanley Harlan's story matters because it's about the value of life. and how easy it is in this sort of military industrial, police industrial complex to just argue about weapons and policy and training and whose fault is it. And right.
But to bring it
blame.
Back to the human
right.
element.
But these are people. And like we're looking for all these justifications because we don't want to face the reality that the authority figures are also people. They're not just caricatures. They're capable of obviously making any sort of decision that any human being could make. And so all of that is why Stanley's case matters. This is the result of human decision making. But if the whole movie is that serious, if the whole movie is just a proof point about, like, you need to care about Stanley Harlan's life, it's only one emotional track, which in turn then takes the audience and it has to escalate that emotion further and further as the film progresses, which is disingenuous, right? You know, that's why it has to be three-dimensional and understanding all the points of view, because then it can be three-dimensional emotionally and not just kind of like an argument for why we need to care about people.
I'm curious about a moment in the process of making the film where you felt like, oh, I can't go there. Maybe there's a piece of footage left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I had a great scene about Stanley Harlan's family, Athena. So Athena, Stanley
his
was
mother.
Pulled over. Yeah, mm-hmm. was pulled over right in front of his house. So his mother and his stepfather witnessed this whole thing go down. And about a year after his death, one of the first days of shooting about this film about, you know, his case specifically before Taser's really involved, is them moving out of their house. Mm-hmm. And she is approaching Stanley's door, which has been closed, and no one's gone in his room since he died. And she's approaching his room and is going to go in his room for the first time. And there are scenes like that that existed that are incredible scenes. I was really afraid when I made the decision to cut a lot of that stuff out. And that's a tough decision because, again, most issue films are made about victims. And they're made about
right.
miscarriages of justice in order to get you mad so that then you feel...
You go be an advocate.
Right.
Or at least you feel
right.
good about yourself
right.
for watching that.
Right. You
right.
want to be, like, on the side of the sympathetic character.
Mm.
And so what I was afraid of when we started, when I was like, we're going to just lose all this stuff and we're going to start with Taser and it's going to be their point of view, basically, was that people would see then us use this dash cam footage toward the, you know, climax of the movie as
the dash cam footage
of Stanley Harlan's death. Excuse me. Yeah. As really emotionally manipulative. And as sort of using his death solely to prove a point about Taser, the company, for example. That's what was scary for me. And it took a lot of massaging to make sure we were treating it with the respect that it deserved and not falling for the thing that I'm railing against about now, which is only using people to serve your own end, only using Stanley Harlan's case as a piece of evidence to move the narrative forward. And ironically, we actually, I think, did him more justice based on the way the film is
distance.
Edited. Right. Than we would have had it been a competing film between Taser's point of view and Athena's point of view. The reason this movie matters is because ultimately we've spent the past 30 minutes, you know, we like spend most of the movie, and there's a reason why they're the first victims you meet. Everybody else is just talked about or in archive footage, right, or seen.
Yeah.
There's no actual interaction with somebody who's lost someone who's lived through it until this moment. And it's because we put all that effort into showing the emotional distance between the decision makers and the cost, the real actual human cost. And so it's certainly meant to build sympathy for the real human cost. But because of the structure of the film, it's not necessarily like disingenuous in being emotionally manipulative. It's still emotionally manipulative. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your age? How old are you?
I forget how old I am now. It's been so long. I feel like I'm about 22 because this is the only thing I've ever done with my adult life.
It's okay. The first one always takes a long time, yeah. Is what I hear.
I turned 30 in September of 2015. Yeah. So I guess you're 30 and a quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to be 30, but I think it's way cooler to be like, yeah, it would be awesome if I had finished this movie earlier and be like, I'm 27, whatever, you know, but I don't know. I'm not that smart.
I'm asking because there are a few moments in the Q&A where you reference your age. And so I'm hoping we just talk about that a little bit because I think it's really neat to think about the development that goes along in one's 20s and also artistically how you grow in the first project. Let's hear the clip about Nick, Somebody Has to Pay. Talking about Stanley's parents. So then this clip, you're talking about getting to know Stanley's parents over the first year of filming.
By the end of that first year, when I'd known them, I was really an idealistic 23 or 24-year-old at that point. And so I felt very much a sort of inner moral compass, you know, that wanted me to do them justice, to say, like, somebody has to pay for what happened to this young man.
Great. And then there's this other moment later on when you talk about, we'll just play these back to back. And it was easy for me as a 22-year-old who was in his first job. Let's hear that one.
And so it was easy for me as a 22-year-old who was kind of like in his first job at KOMU, but wasn't 29 in like a real, you know, job, not to disparage KOMU, but like, you know, like it's hard when you're a real reporter and you're working on deadline. I think it was easier for me to kind of take a step back and think about the humanity of what was happening.
Obviously, you know, this was a long process, like many first works are, and so much was learned, I'm sure. I want to ask you about what you think the role of being an amateur is. And mm-hmm. kind of, because when you started this project, you really had no idea that you were going to make a film. Yeah. You weren't setting out to make a documentary, and now here you are.
It's hard, you know, because there's such an... There are more ethical questions than people realize there are, especially in filmmaking. You know, at KOMU, you kind of have, or in any TV news job, you kind of have a formula that you go, this is what I stick to, and these are the rules, and I don't, you know, don't go inside if they offer you a drink of water. Like, that's, you know, there's a boundary that is a little bit rigid and easy to follow.
So just to clarify then, the moment in the Q&A where Athena's, you're, you know, out there sweating in 100-degree weather,
right,
and she offers you some water. This is the day of Stanley's, well, the next morning after Stanley
yeah.
died. And you say no thanks. It was because it was the rules to say no thanks.
Yeah, a little. I mean, like, what I'm joking about is, though, that, like, there's, yeah, there's you're more sensitive in a journalism background to the separation between subject
and teller.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. But it also was because the stakes were so high here. Like, the reality of the loss was striking. It was really something that, like, clawed into me. Was I've never dealt with death before, like this. I mean, at that point, all my grandparents were alive. I mean, it was crazy to me to see the mm-hmm. real cost of it. So certainly, like, I didn't want to make an ethical sort of, like, you know, don't cozy up too much to them thing. That was a smaller part of it compared to, like,
not wanting to
give these people space. Yeah, like, this is really serious and terrible. And you're not a part of that. You're not a part of this story. You're, you know, like, here to sort of translate it. Part of the problems I have with journalism, for example, is the self-importance that can sometimes come along as the storyteller, because you buy into this sort of, like, you're a pillar of the public, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, and that can inflate yourself to make it too much about you.
Surely the act of making the self-portrait, as you said, this film is in some ways is performative too.
You get time and space to explore differently when making a film. And the problem with that time and space is, excuse me, especially with activist filmmaking in a way,
mm-hmm.
is that it's easy to get sucked back into the role that you're playing in everything and that you're an essential
part. As the discoverer of the capital T truth.
Right. And you become and all of this comes back to self-awareness. It's like I used to joke because I was making a movie about guys who didn't have any self-awareness in a community, in a filmmaking community sometimes that doesn't have self-awareness, you know?
Yeah, but also, I mean, one of the things that comes across, and I think we see this in the way that you mention age so often, is that, you know, you're keenly self-aware.
Yeah,
which is great. And also can, I maybe know from some personal experience, can be paralyzing.
Sure, yeah, yeah, because...
When did you face those paralyzing moments of, am I being too self-aware here? Do I need to step back and just... and be present in the thing?
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, that goes back to some of the things in the edit. Like, this fear that people would accuse me of using people to my own end actually hindered the edit, because you also have to remember that that's part of editing, right? Like, we're not taking my 6 years of, like, you know, recorded making the film and putting it on screen. We're taking 90 minutes of that experience and trying to reflect it. So there are definitely times where, like, you can be hypersensitive to that idea of forgetting that every edit and every choice and everything is a manipulation itself. So you know, like, you're never going to be perfect. It's like, again, the idea that you could be perfectly objective as a journalist. Mm-hmm. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. So in terms of being young, I think what's interesting for, you know, for amateur filmmakers too is remembering that you are in a relationship. It's coexistence. It's not, you know,
a relationship with the piece that you're making.
Yes, it's especially because almost all of these things are made about people, and it's a human relationship. And so you don't want to basically ever feel so weighted that one is more important than the other. Now, theoretically, of course, like, you can't make the film without the subject, the human on the other end of it that you're making it about, or humans that you're making about. But that codependence also works the other way, because in a lot of instances, you know, you may be going in and intruding on these people's lives, and at the end of the day, they're better off for it. It's why it's such a fascinating...
Or at the very least, a light is shined in a space where
Right. Normally
an audience full of... at the Missouri Theater would know about.
Right. That's what makes documentary filmmaking so fascinating, is that connective tissue between relationship between filmmaker and subjects.